Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
That's awesome. Awesome.
That's awesome.
Awesome. Awesome. Awesome.
Oh, dude, that's awesome.
That's
awesome.
Really awesome.
Awesome.
That's, so
that's awesome.
Awesome.
Oh, awesome.
That's awesome.
With Stephen Bradford. Steve! Oh, Steve.
Oh, Bradford.
Oh, Steve.
Bradford, your hair looks amazing today.
Coming from you, that means a lot to me.
It does. You actually have it, like, under control now where...
Is not,
it is, because it looks good. I'm like, wow, this guy's got good hair now.
I
don't know
now.
What the hell you were doing for the last 10 years.
All I had to do was brush it straight back and put a lot of product in it, and all of a sudden Steve's like, wow.
No, you got actually a haircut. You like? You have a trendier haircut.
I know.
Is that
it
the wife's suggestion?
A little bit.
Yeah?
I got to take...
Is,
thing,
it,
I
is there benefits to that or no?
I don't kiss and tell. I don't kiss nor do I tell.
So you're married. No, I'm kidding. No, I'm just kidding. That's a joke.
It's a joke.
It's a poor
it's
joke.
All a joke. Yeah, and she told me, she's like, take responsibility, wear some nice clothes, brush your hair.
Yeah.
Come on, get your act together.
I know, my wife cracks the whip. I'll go in my closet and see new clothes that I'll actually be like, oh, that's not bad.
Dude, I got to tell you, though, I got in trouble. Not in trouble, but like I was, so I bought some new spraying. I brought some new scents on the road with us.
Will you spit it freaking out today?
Okay.
Good gosh.
Remember I bought some good smelling stuff? I bought some good smelling stuff and I brought some on the road, right?
It's not good smelling, but yes.
Here's the problem that I had. The one that I was using before was like an oil,
yes.
Right? So I would put it,
horrifying.
I would put it on me.
Awful.
So when I got a spray,
yes,
I would spray it on my hand and on my neck and then rub them together. But it was too strong.
Right.
So I do that on the road sometimes because we're running around going a lot of people and
sure.
We just want to keep up the smell.
Yes.
I learned my lessons from you.
Absolutely.
I did that at home and my wife is like, what the freak are you doing? She's like, she literally walks into a room and goes, what the hell happened in here?
Yeah. So next time what we're going to do.
And she like got a headache and got mad at me.
Uh-oh.
So, it's your fault.
The wife scorned.
It's your fault, because I'm trying
it's not
to,
my fault.
I'm trying to smell good. I'm learning my lessons from you, and it was
a
bad lesson.
You have bad technique, and you have bad choice of scent.
She said you got to spray it once up in the air and walk through it with the sprays.
Oh, is that?
I've
done that.
I've seen you spray that Axe body spray like you're putting on bug spray, bro.
Oh, dude, and sunblock. Together. I spray myself down. It is the best. It's the best. I don't do it at home like that. Now I got my poor son's doing the same thing.
Oh, man.
I'm like, dude, way too much, bro.
Way
too much.
Yeah.
What, Dad? But you said to do it like this and four things. I go, just stop.
But that's
when you're
going out and hugging. You're 12. Hugging 200 people and it rubs off.
Yeah. Well, it did get him a girl who likes him now. So I'm sure it's because of the axe.
So anyway.
So anyway, we're gonna go get you stuff that actually smells good.
Okay.
End of subject.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Because
speaking of smelling good.
And great hair.
Great hair.
I love this guy.
We have.
I'm excited to talk to this guy.
Gentlemen, I've learned a lot from him just by looking at him.
What does that even mean?
I just want to. So we can talk about this more, obviously, when we start talking to him. But he's a great dad.
Yep.
And he's great to people at work.
Yep.
And so, you know. Coming in here in my mid-20s, people like you, people like this man here.
Yeah, John. Oh, I just ruined it.
Spoiler! John York is here!
Spoiler! John York.
Say something. You guys are weird. Wow.
No, this is amazing that
you
we got...
You smell each other a lot?
Yeah, we do.
I guess you spend a lot of time together.
About 100 days a year together.
Wow.
So that's kind of where...
You have to smell good.
You have to smell good, and you have to like each other. That's
like,
what we figured that out, John.
I like my natural musk.
Yes. Now, do you use deodorant?
Sometimes.
Do you
not a
use
lot.
Perfume? Do you use cologne or any
no
kind
cologne.
Of body spray?
Nope, no cologne. But
nothing,
my deodorant is what is it? That is it? Palm? It's actually from my wife.
Oh,
it's,
is it? Yeah,
some,
I don't know.
You using pomegranate
very gentle,
juice as your
whatever? Yeah,
whatever the wife has. I steal my wife's also because it's all natural, and it's not like your all natural stuff that doesn't work, Bradford.
Well,
but this is this stuff that works and smells good.
I smell good. I don't smell like anything unless I add something to it.
Hmm. What does he smell like?
You don't smell bad today.
Yeah, no, because I use the natural deodorant.
We got to stop John York from.
I know.
From smelling. I've been smelling things all day so far.
Okay. We'll leave it. We'll leave that right. At that on your.
Well,
drive
it's
over.
Good to be on your podcast. One of the last ones. No, you have a lot more, don't you?
What is that? Know. What does that even mean? Do you even know what a podcast is?
No, what is a podcast? Is that like where you cast for fish or something? You're in a pod. Yes.
So
a space
honestly,
pod.
Do you?
That's
are
a
you
podcast.
Up, are you up with technology or are you?
I have an iPhone.
Okay,
and
you
I
do?
Have email, and I'm on Twitter.
Okay,
and that's it.
And
that's
it.
Text,
and that's all.
Text.
And that's all you care about.
Correct.
Right. So otherwise, you don't listen to podcasts.
No.
Okay. Do you know how to get podcasts?
No.
Okay, great. So
I don't know how to put on Netflix on my TV.
Okay, right. Welcome to 2019.
It's fabulous. My world is good, man.
Yeah, I know it is.
He knows where the weights are, though. That's what he can find. He can find.
Jacked.
He can find
this
some.
Dude.
He can find.
But
some.
You know what? He's always been since I've been here. He was always in great shape, like always.
Hey, if you're gonna get caught fooling around with Felicia in the bushes, you better look good.
You better look those, good. You know. But what's amazing is because genetics, you have great genetics because you would. Literally eat your.
That's right.
Eat
yes.
your ice cream every. You would tell
that's
me.
That's not anymore. I do have my snacks at night, but I used to eat a whole Entenmann's coffee cake.
Did
which
you,
they don't sell in California anymore. I'm so sad.
There's like MSG in it or something.
And then I would wash it down with a pint of Häagen-Dazs.
Is
coffee,
that
ice cream?
Dude, that's enough to make someone diabetic.
And then I would go to sleep.
That's amazing. Dude, that is the
dude,
best.
I remember when Entenmann's
never have
was
a problem.
Like, when Entenmann's was like, when it came out.
Oh, Entenmann's was the
big
that
deal.
Was the best, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Would you get the cinnamon? The
no,
cinnamon
it was one? The New York Entenmann's coffee cake, and it a crumb cake, and it's
oh,
the best.
Yeah.
And Jim Warren somehow, you know, Jim,
yeah, of course.
Our friend,
yeah.
He knew that about me. He saw some freebie online, went for it, and all of a sudden in the mail I received this New York Entenmann's coffee cake because they have not sold it here. All of us, I would go to Gelson's to
yeah.
shopping. They had a whole, you know, shelf load of them, and I'm getting one every day. All of a sudden, they were gone.
Oh, that's like took
and
your
I was
crack
very
away.
Sad, and I didn't understand why.
I was very sad.
I literally looked it up. I did Google it. I looked it up on the internet. How come Entenmann's is not on the West Coast? Because they sell it in the Midwest.
Yeah.
Sure. And I got this.
Did you get an answer?
And I didn't understand where I got it. I'm asking Vicky. I'm asking Skyler. Did you send me a cake? What's going on? Nobody. And then out of the blue, Jim made. Somehow I got a reference
so, like
and I found
cake?
Out that it was Jim. Oh, yeah. It was
so
gone.
Do you get it still monthly
no.
or no?
No, I tried to find
damn
out where
him.
The warehouse is literally, so I could call them and have them ship them to me. But
there's
well, hopefully,
there's got to be a coffee cake
I hope somebody from Entenmann's is here.
Listening to this podcast, right. whatever right. that is. And they send me a whole bunch of
so,
New York Entenmann's.
So we have a talk show, basically, that you can listen to anytime,
it's
anywhere. It's not
radio.
Live. It's great. And people listen to it in the car. I mean, because I drive so far, so I'm always listening to podcasts now. You know, it's like having your morning zoo without the music and everything else.
How do you get a podcast?
It's on, it's on an app on your phone. It's probably already there.
What's an app? No, I'm kidding. I know what an app is.
Yeah,
so you can take it anywhere. So you can listen to it while you're in the car, while you're waiting in the doctor's office, while you're taking a walk, wherever you go.
It's pretty cool, John.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
All right.
So
yeah.
You don't have to listen to this one. I'll think about it. That means 5 years from now, you'll be like, Steve, I just listened to my first podcast.
Yeah. I think I did listen to a podcast. An Uber driver picked me up, took me to the airport. And
oh,
he
and he was listening
he
to
He was listening to some actor have a conversation
there you go.
With some guys.
It's
so
actually pretty cool, man. It's
look,
actually
look at what's happening now. Some actor talking to some guys.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You smell good.
You smell really good.
Yeah, that doesn't
Let's look talk about John York.
No, let's not.
Yes.
There's nothing interesting about me.
There,
holy
you
crap.
Want to know about.
There's a lot of interesting things. I want to know first, because the great thing about this
format
is that I've obviously known you for a long time. We've golfed. Yep. We've spent time together. We've been on the road together. But we never really get in kind of deep on how it all started for somebody.
Okay.
You know, like – you're from Chicago.
From Chicago.
Right. So just kind of tell us a little bit about where you grew up and
what kind of kid you were.
Yeah. Were you into sports or acting or when, you know. Just...
I was probably a troublemaker. I got away with a lot of things.
Probably.
Probably. These little green eyes.
Is there a record?
Let's see. So I'm from the south side of Chicago.
So you're a White Sox fan?
No, actually, well, in Chicago growing up for me, because that's when Wrigley Field had no lights.
Right.
People, everyone was a Cub fan. And what you went to a Cubs game to watch a baseball game.
Sure.
You were a Sox fan to party and get drunk and drink Falstaff with Harry Carey. That's when Harry Carey was announcing the White Sox games. Didn't go to the games. I was from the south side, southwest side, 6300 okay. South for those people, 6300 South in California, Kedzie area, from St. Rita neighborhood. I went to St. Rita grade school. I went to Brother Ice High School. And I went
Brother
to
Ice?
Brother Ice High School, yeah, the Brother Ice Crusaders. I was a city. We were the city champs in football and the Prep Bowl, one of the last years of the Prep Bowl.
What is a Prep Bowl?
The Prep Bowl is the Catholic League plays. Okay. The winner of the Catholic League championship plays the winner of the Public League championship in Soldiers Field.
Oh, wow.
And we won, and it was fantastic.
Did you play?
Yeah, I was very good. I was the only junior on the offense.
I was a fullback.
Nice. Really kind of a blocking back.
Yeah.
And the sidebar story to our championship game, we played Chicago Vocational, a.k.a. CVS, and one of their linebackers was Keena Turner, who ultimately went on to play for the San Francisco 49ers in the Joe Montana era.
Wow.
And won a couple Super Bowls.
Nice. Yeah.
So fast forward to John York going through his acting stuff, you know, figuring out my life in Chicago, working as a doorman at a nightclub on Rush Street. And there I am standing, you know, checking IDs, the whole deal. And there's a lot of, we call them regular, you know, the regulars that come into the bar pretty much every night. And this one guy comes in, he was a sports agent or manager, whatever he was. And he comes in with these two big guys. And I'm looking, this is so-and-so from the Detroit Lions. And this is Keena Turner from the San Francisco 49ers. And I'm shaking his hand, you know, looking up at him. And I said, Keena Turner, you know, you don't know me, but you were my blocking assignment in the Chicago Prep Bowl. And we kicked your butt. And he's like, you did. So that was pretty cool to kind of have that little moment.
So at that time when you were playing football in the Prep Bowl, what were you thinking?
That I was going to be a professional football player, that I was going to go to college and get – in fact, I did get a lot of letters from big schools around the country after my junior year.
Wow.
I was 210 pounds. You know, I was a pretty good football player.
Yeah.
The Catholic League was pretty well known for its sports, you know, and its athletes.
Australian rules football, though, right?
Hard helmet. Yeah, I should have played without a helmet. Anyway, so I got all these letters, and then – now, moving forward, looking forward to my senior year, and I'm going to be this big football guy, you know, at UCLA or USC, I started to have an issue with my stomach and my bowel movements. So we're going to go off into a land that no one wants to know about.
Oh, gosh.
But this is what changed my life. And I ultimately, I'll try to fast forward without getting gross here, but I was diagnosed with ulcerative colitis.
Oh, my gosh.
And in about 6 months, I lost about 55 pounds.
Jeez.
And I went to my first football practice in the summertime, and I ran one 20-yard sprint and, like, fell over. You know, I didn't have any oxygen, no white blood cells in my body.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was kind of hiding it from my mom and dad, even though I was losing weight and they're noticing it.
Yeah.
Big family. You know, they're noticing but not noticing, and I didn't want to say anything because I didn't want to ruin my football career, and I should have said something. I could have gotten help. And again, this is back in the 70s, so medicine has just, like this podcast, has progressed from, you know, aspirin to incredible to medications right now that where I'm getting really good help now.
Right.
But in those days, you know,
there
these
was
things
not
were pretty
a lot
new.
Of help.
Not a lot of help.
And that's something that can just appear out of nowhere?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Ulcerative colitis, it's an immune disease.
Okay.
So basically, the short story, the easiest way to describe it is it's your immune cells going and attacking healthy cells in your colon and in your intestine.
Yeah.
So that causes inflammation,
yeah.
And then you bleed and so on and so forth.
Oh,
causes
gosh.
All kind of problems.
Yeah.
So Dr. Joseph Kirshner was my first doctor. My family doctor sent me to Chicago Hospital, where I was then relayed over to Dr. Joseph Kirshner, who is this world-renowned guy, wrote books about it. I was very lucky to get him.
Yeah.
And I told him, I don't care what happens, because they were going to operate. And I was going to, you know, I was literally going to get a colonoscopy or a colostomy.
Yeah.
Oh, my
you know?
Gosh. as a senior in high school, you were going to have a bag for the rest of your life?
Right.
Oh,
which
my
I
gosh.
Didn't really understand.
Sure.
I kind of knew, but my mind is as simple then as it is now, so I really wasn't putting two and two together. And I told him, I don't care what happens, I'm just going to play football. So he thought, let's try some medication. You know, and he put me on some prednisone, and I blew up like the Pillsbury Doughboy and other medications. Ugh. And there was a slow progression of getting better without the surgery and diet restrictions.
Sure.
No dairy, no fibers, no peanuts, no, yeah. you know, fruits and vegetables. It was yeah. pretty much yeah. mashed potatoes and white bread.
And you're in the Midwest, so that worked out pretty well, though, right?
Exactly. Ham and scallops.
Yeah.
So I survived all that. And but by doing that, instead of going to a big school and thinking about football, I ended up going to a small school in Wisconsin where I went for 2 years and met some friends, and that's where I really started to have to think about what do I want to do with my life, because I wasn't a good student, like some people in the news today who didn't want to go to college, if you know what I mean. Anyway, and I decided I wanted to live in Hollywood. When I was 9, 10 years old, shoveling snow, I wanted to live where the Rose yeah. Bowl was played. You know, I'm like, I want to live yeah. there.
So that was more weather related than
yes,
career.
It was.
Yeah, okay.
In the beginning.
But also Hollywood. I think so. When I was, I'm thinking, I want to be in Hollywood, and I want to be on. I want to be in the television industry. What do I want to do? Thinking about being a stuntman or a camera operator. I would ask some friends, people, high school teachers. This is what I'm thinking about doing. What do I have to do? And they would advise me. This, and this. This is expensive. You got to do this. But why do you want to be behind the camera? You should be in front of the camera. And when I was in fifth grade, I was the Artful Dodger in my brother's
yes.
high school senior play, Oliver, right. at Brother Rice. And I had a great time.
Go and steady yourself. I don't.
Yep. I'd do anything for one kiss. And that's when I left, you know, when I kissed Nancy, who was the senior senior high school girl, on the cheek.
Oh, man.
It was over for me. Yeah. And that's why I'm the man I am today.
And that's why you're an actor.
Yeah, exactly. So I got maybe the bug there, thinking and considering that, why not? Why can't – so let me look into being an actor. What do I got to do? And one thing led to another, and I went to John Robert Powers Modeling School.
Wow, you did,
for
huh?
3 weeks. It was a 3-week crash course.
Is that in the Midwest or here?
In Chicago, downtown Chicago.
They're everywhere, though.
But the connection, I like to describe my life as there was always been a hand. When I needed a hand, there was a hand to reach out, take my hand, and pull me to the next hand.
Right. Mm.
And it didn't happen overnight and automatically, but there was always, when it was time for my hand to be taken,
the door opened also, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
So this crash course modeling thing that I did at John Robert Powers, the lady that was the counselor, her boyfriend was a nightclub owner on down on Rush Street,
yeah.
PS Chicago. So she got me an interview with him. That's how I got my doorman job yeah. at PS Chicago.
How long were you a doorman for?
A year and a half, 2 years.
So
it seemed like forever, but it felt like, you know.
It's a crazy life.
It was great. I'll get to that in a second.
Okay, go.
Because I just want to kind of connect the dots.
Sure,
yeah.
You know, you guys are in your car listening to a podcast, so just relax.
I've never seen Max Scorpio so angry.
Yeah, I know.
So in that modeling class, everybody's brand new. There was a photographer and a makeup artist. The three of us got together, did a test picture. This was before cell phones, so you
sure,
actually yeah. have to shoot film.
Yep.
Develop it.
And we did it for free, and all I had to do was pay for my pictures. That makeup artist took her pictures. My picture was in her book around to the different agencies. And the girl, Adrian, at the Ann Getty's agency in Chicago said, "Who's this guy? I've never seen him before. John York, well, tell him to call me and come in." So I went, met with her.
Wow.
She
and
met Getty's, with Ann.
They put a flower on your head?
No, it was not the same one. Exactly. And Adrian went to Ann and said, "I don't know. I just have a feeling about this guy, you know?" And so I met with Ann. "What do you want to be? I want to be an actor and, you know, this, that, and the other." And so that's how I got my agent.
Wow.
That's how I got my job as a doorman. As a
that's
doorman
amazing.
In this nightclub, I met Kathy Scambiaterra, really dear friend, who was taking class at Wisdom Bridge Theater, and that's how I got hooked up at Wisdom Bridge Theater with my acting teacher, who I ultimately, when I moved to California, picked up classes with him. He came out a few months before I did, and I just continued classes with him. So all
wow.
those hands,
yeah,
you know what
yeah.
I mean? It was all
absolutely.
Just kind of connected, and it
that's
was
cool,
just
man.
Amazing and spiritual.
Yeah, for sure.
That's how I like to put a
yeah, absolutely.
So when you were in that period, though, was it just – where did you feel like you were being led, or were you like, "Hey, I'm chasing something here," or am I just in, or were you just enjoying being where you were?
No, I was wondering what was happening because it was taking so long because I was working in a nightclub and it was the 80s, so there was disco and
a lot
of bad things going on. I'm wondering, am I just going to die here at this front door? Am I ever going to make it home? And
did you break up?
I remember
fights?
One night, I'm looking out the bar window down the street. There was a very fancy nightclub called Faces. People from Chicago and Rush Street will know the club Faces. In fact, PS Chicago was right across the street from BBC and Poets, for all you Chicago folks out there that know, right down the street from Mother's, all these great bars. But Faces, they were shooting Dr. Detroit with Dan Aykroyd, so there's all these big movie lights and cameras and trucks, and I'm looking out the window and I'm going, wow, that's what I want to be, you know, and I'm just here doing Martell shots and carting people. I'm doing Martell shots, getting drunk, telling people at the front door, you're too drunk to come in here.
Yeah.
You can't come in
what
here.
What is Martell?
It's a Courvoisier.
Ooh.
So,
okay,
So, anyway.
Yeah.
Again.
So, when
and ultimately, with an agent, so the just kind of got through this neutral.
Yeah.
You know, the car was in neutral.
The
wheels were spinning. Yeah. The car was in neutral. I'm going to classes. Is this ever going to change? What the heck's going to happen to my life? When Ann Geddes decided she was going to expand her office to California.
Nice.
And she had I was part of the third year group. The first year was herself and one or two actors. They went to California. She worked with another agent out here.
She was here before you came out.
Well, she would come out part-time for pilot season.
Gotcha.
In those days. Pilot season, you know, it was February through May, whatever it was.
Yeah.
If you get lucky, fine. If you want to stay in California, great. Otherwise, come back to Chicago. Second year, more people. The third year, I was a part of that group with Allison LaPlaca, Rick Kuhlman, and Aidan Quinn was kind of in that group.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so I knew Aidan very well. Aidan was in class with me, in Chicago. So I knew Aidan from Chicago, and he was a Geddes client. Great guy. And where am I?
Third year coming out to California for pilot.
Okay. Season. So Ann says she would also have a casting director. Eve Brandstein would come, and she looked at a lot of Ann's clients. Who do you think is marketable? Who could, you know? I was one of those people that she thought could possibly have a chance out in, you know, California. So Ann asked me if I was willing to go, and of course I want to go. That's where I want to live, you know.
Right.
So that was the moment of okay. And I had $90 in my pocket and got on a Capital Airlines red-eye flight with two other actors.
Oh, my
and
gosh.
Got propositioned on the plane.
Yes, buddy.
And turned her down. But anyway.
What?
That's a true story. But I'm not going to go there. That's all you're going to know about that.
Okay, thank you.
And
we'll stop right there.
Landed, and the next day walked out the front door and because I didn't have a car, started walking around, and I ended up getting a job as a host at Kathy Gallagher's restaurant. And met one of the guys, one of the managers, knew I didn't have a car, offered me his 10-speed bike, and that's how I got around L.A. for the next, you know, year on a 10-speed bike, going from the Valley to MGM for an audition.
No way.
That was my life for a while. And I was really happy to have that bike.
So you, when
Isn't
you
that amazing?
Yeah.
Perspective?
Oh, so happy. I got everywhere. I was in great shape.
Yeah, dude.
When you got on that plane.
Yes, you were.
Where you're like, I'm not coming back.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. There was no I'm not coming back.
Yeah,
I mean, to visit my family, but I'm not going for 6 weeks.
I'm going
forever. I'm going to get a job, and I'm going to live in California, and this is what it's going to be, however it's going to unfold. I didn't have a plan. I just knew I was going to stay there. So I knew I had to get a job.
Yeah.
And then I found out about Ed being in town, so I picked up classes with him. And let's see. So Ann ultimately was with Harry Ufflin. She opened her own office 6 months after that in the summertime. Everybody had to kind of move out of the apartment. She got a different apartment. So I stayed on the couch of one of the actresses in Ed's class. And that's where I was for a while. And then shortly thereafter, I met my wife, Vicky, on an audition. And I just, when I walked in that room, there's something special about this girl. And I got a call back, so I got to talk to her even more.
She was casting.
She was in casting. She was in the outer office receiving the actors, you know, signing them in and that kind of thing. And I just was talking to her. And it was a film called Chattanooga Choo Choo. And it was Barbara Remsen casting. Barbara Remsen, ultimately, her daughter Anne married Vicky's brother Scott. So it's this kind of incestuous weird thing that was going on. It was all so tied together.
Yeah.
And but that was later on. So I got a call back, got another call back, and I got the job. And
what
it
job
was, small,
was it, Chet?
The part was, the role was, that was George Kennedy owned a football team, the Chattanooga Choo Choos, whatever it was,
yeah.
And Barbara Eden was his wife.
Nice.
And on the train during this trip, my character, like, flirted and stole or had an affair with Barbara Eden.
Yeah, okay? Buddy.
That was the script. However, so I get cast. I go in to sign to my agent's office to sign the script. She says, last night they rewrote the script and they wrote your part out.
Oh.
They changed your part, but they're giving you, you know, a small couple of lines here and there. So I felt terrible. But the interesting thing is, when I got the part, Vicky called me because the chatter in their office is, this guy likes you, but he's afraid to ask you out. Why don't you call him? She's like, I'm not going to call him. So she needed wardrobe sizes, and Vicky called my agent. Oh, I don't have them. Let me call John and get back to you. And Vicky said, no, I'll call him. You know, so she called me, and we talked, exchanged the information. At the end of it, I still didn't. I was nervous, and she said, you know, you should go out and celebrate. You got a great acting part. And I said, oh, really? Well, what do you want to do?
Perfect.
And that was the beginning of 33 years later. Here 33, we are.
33. How long have you been married?
I think loves me. I don't know. Well, we've known each other since 1983.
Wow, man.
And we were married in 86.
Amazing.
And we fell in love in 92.
That's amazing. She might say 98.
Yeah, 98. 2018.
Yeah. That's funny, dude.
It's a slow burn.
So after all those years, instead of saying, I love you so much, you say, I tolerate you. I tolerate you so much.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So was that your first booking?
That was my first booking.
The Chattanooga Choo Choo?
Was that my first booking? You know what? That's a good question because I know I did an under five in a day on Capital. Remember Capital,
yeah,
the soap opera?
Yeah, the soap opera Capital.
And I don't
remember
if that was before first, Chattanooga Choo Choo or after. I think it was after.
Well, the big question is, when was Werewolf?
Werewolf.
That's all we want to talk about.
Werewolf.
Werewolf
was my big break.
It was, right? It was on Fox, right?
It was on Fox.
Yeah, I remember this.
When Fox was first starting out. So this was back in 1987, was when, so we were married in 86, auditioning, going on pilots, getting called back, getting called back, getting called back. It was never me. I was always getting close, but it was never me. And I'm telling Vicky, it's never me. Two of the ones that got away, wherever that was, and I think it was before Werewolf, I was sitting out in the outer, in the lobby with, or the waiting room next to Meg Ryan, you know, getting ready to read with Ridley Scott for the Anthony Edwards part in Top Gun.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I didn't get that. And then one audition I read with Gina Davis for the Brad Pitt part in Thelma and Louise.
Yeah.
And I didn't get that.
Wow.
You know, so I'm feeling like, wow, I'm kind of doing something right, maybe.
Right, you're
because
getting
I'm
close.
Getting called back.
Right,
getting close. Yeah. And again, I'm what's going on? How come it's never me, Vicky. It's never me. She says, just be patient. It's going to be you. It's going to be you. And they started auditioning. Fox was first starting out. They had their Saturday night lineup. And now they were doing their Sunday night lineup. And I went in to read for this character, Eric Cord, and pilot, just another audition. And, you know, went on that, got called back. And I think we made the test deal or however. I don't remember how that worked. But I remember being in the room with, like, the five guys. It was now we're being put on tape, you know, for the decision.
Yeah.
And I'm hearing the casting director kind of down the hall, and all of us can hear it. She's on the phone trying to book, I think it was Zach Galligan, who was from Gremlins.
Yeah.
So, and I'm kind of thinking, this kind of
sucks.
You know, I mean, why are we here if you're trying to book this guy?
I know, Hollywood's brutal.
So, but what it did was it really relaxed me.
Sure,
and
nothing to lose.
Now I didn't really care, so I just kind of was relaxed and went in, and like I'm talking to you right now and doing the pilot and crumpling my paper and throwing it at my, you know, You're My Best Friend was the other character in the scene, and really had a great time and left. And as I understood from one of the producers who created the show, you know, actors often hear, oh, man, you got the part as soon as you walked in the room.
Yeah.
Well, that's what he told me. I said, I just want to thank you. You know, I'm taking him out to lunch, you know, to thank him for giving me this chance. And he said, oh, as soon as you walked in, you had the part. Because it was just a normal guy. It was Joe Blow, you know, just the guy next door down the street, you know, you go to school with. And it wasn't some fancy guy with an edge and all these other things that they're looking for at the time. And I got lucky. So there you go. And Werewolf, we did 28 half hours. The pilot was considered 3 half hours, so like 31 shows.
Wow.
And then as we were waiting for the pickup, there was the writer's strike of 1988. And that lasted the whole year. And that they didn't pick up the show, for one. And then there was the writer's strike. So now I'm an actor out of work again.
With no work coming.
We did get a bunch of residuals from the reruns.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Fast forward, still auditioning, trying to get somewhere. And my wife is now pregnant. Now we're moving forward, and she's getting more pregnant and more pregnant.
Is she still working at this point?
She's still working, yes.
As in casting, right?
Correct. No, she was working at I think it was Lorimar at the time.
Oh, okay.
Basically working as a receptionist, you know, as an assistant to an executive.
Production or something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so now she's pregnant, and I'm not working, and I'm thinking, I want my wife to be home with the baby, so I got to get a job. So I went and got a job at the Cheesecake Factory. And I was waiting tables at the Cheesecake Factory in Woodland Hills.
Yeah.
And people would recognize me from Werewolf. And they said, can I have your autograph? And I'd say, well, you're going to get it on the check. You know, thanks for eating here at the end of the meal. So just leave me a big tip. My wife's pregnant.
Yeah, right?
And perfect. Actually, a couple of people did.
Yeah.
But when I recognized that, I'm thinking, see, she could have twins, triplets. Let's just bump that tip mono up.
How was that? Was that brutal? Was that?
No, it really wasn't. Yeah. It was okay because it was what I had to do.
Yeah, you were serving your family.
Again, she's going to have a baby, and I wanted her to be home if that's how we were going to make it all work out.
So you do what you
have
to do.
And, well, the good spirits out there in the world, man, my agent called and said this is November now, and they're casting a big role at General Hospital. So I think I started waiting tables. I went through training late September, maybe early October, started waiting tables mid-October. Late November or mid-November was when she called. They're casting a major role at General Hospital. It's Robert Scorpio's brother. What do you want to do? And I'm like, well, of course I want to go in on it. But I'm thinking, God, he's an Australian guy. So I had to go to Samuel French, and I picked up a dialect tape. And
I'm trying
to practice, excuse me, the scent of these two men and their musk and their odor. It's just overwhelming.
That is, you just get stuck in your nose. There's nothing you can
do. So I studied the dialect tape, and I went in to see Mark Teschner, our brilliant casting director. And I did my scene, and he said, good, very good. Or no, he said, no, what did he say? Wait, because that was Glory, what she said. Because I got to go through this. It's really fun.
Yeah.
What did Mark say? Oh, that Mark said, good effort. Do the scene with the Australian accent. He says, good effort. And I thought he meant good effort. Don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out. Right? So he called me back. And the Mark story, there's a backstory with Mark and Lisa, who is, you know, up in casting now. They were looking for months for this guy. They're looking at English guys, Australian guys, South African guys, any actor in L.A. And this was down to the last hour, the 11th hour of casting. We got to cast this role. It's going to start soon. And Mark, going through all the files in the file cabinet, pulled out a picture that he still had on file, and he showed it to Lisa, and he says, if this guy can do the accent, he's going to book the role.
Wow.
That's the true story.
That's great.
I got goosebumps.
That's amazing. I know we owe so much to Mark, don't we?
Everything. So anyway, he said good effort, and he called me back. And I read with Gloria, and the actor before me must have been in the room, it seemed to me, for, you know, 20 minutes, a half an hour. He was in there forever, and I'm thinking, God, she must love this guy, you know.
Yeah, of course.
That's what act, you know, your mind reels. And I go in there, I read the scene one time, and she looks at me, she goes, good, very good. And I'm like, but I can do it better. I can do it without, you know, what do you want me to do? Stand on my head, you know, I'm just thinking, I don't want to leave.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
But I left, and there was five guys they brought back to test. And from those five, they narrowed it down to myself and Paul Satterfield.
Paul Satterfield!
To do a second test for Max Scorpio.
Wow.
And I'm thinking, you know, and Paul is a great guy, but I'm thinking, God, he looks like Christopher Reeve.
Totally.
He doesn't look like Tristan Rogers. Maybe
blonde,
I'm going to get this part.
Reeves, yeah.
And I got the part, and I started working January 14th, and I still had 2 weeks of wait shifts that I had to complete. So I call him, and the General Hospital's calling me and saying, we need you on this day, this day, this day. So I called work. And, of course, the manager at the Cheesecake Factory, very kind, very supportive, knew what was going on. She's like, just go, man. Good luck. Good luck to you. Just go do your thing. So they let me go. And I started January 14th. And 3 weeks later, February 9th, my daughter was born. And I'm going to get all teary-eyed here.
Oh, my
gosh. It's just
amazing
to me.
That's amazing. Dude, I heard you went to Disneyland again. and had an amazing time. What happened?
Oh my gosh. So yes, last week we went to Disneyland, and it truly was like three of the greatest days we've ever had. And a wow. big reason for that was because we booked this vacation with our old friends, Tracy and the team at Middle of the Magic Travel. Remember those folks?
Yeah, I remember.
The best. So, we love Disney, but we're by no means experts. And when you book with Middle of the Magic Travel, you can rest assured that every detail will be taken care of. And their Disney expertise is extensive. Stevie, let me tell you the ways that they ensured us a magical trip. You ready for this?
Yeah, because I'm ready to take one, so go.
Okay. Well, first of all, our hotel. We thought we'd want to stay in the hotel that we always stay at, the Grand Californian. But Tracy said she could save us over $1,000 by staying at the Disneyland.
Whoop, whoop.
And then she had all these reasons why my kids and my family might even be more comfortable over there. And
wow.
she was right. We love the Disneyland Hotel. They have the headboards that have fireworks. Amazing. So that was the first thing. Right out of the gate, she saved us $1,000 and made us even happier. Dinner reservations. There's a window where you can order when you can make these dinner reservations. We don't know. We don't know. We're not experts.
You're right.
But she made sure she knew exactly what we wanted. So when our window opened up, she was one of the first to get it so that we could get our reservation at the Blue Bayou, which
awesome.
You try to go last minute. You're not getting in.
Yeah, you're not getting in there. Never.
She takes care of that stuff so you don't have to. Tickets were waiting for us when we checked in because she's an authorized Disney vacation expert. So for Disney vacations, the tickets are right there with coupons for those pins that you can trade in the park. So
nice.
We get free pins because we booked through Tracy. Amazing. And our kids were trading pins with everybody. Such a fun thing. They loved it. Our Star Wars reservation, she aligned that with the days that we were going.
Sweet.
All the things that she can take care of. Fast passes, max passes. She can coordinate your travel if you need her to. If you have special needs, she can help you with those accommodations. And all beyond that, special touches. She goes above and beyond to make you and your family feel special. And for listeners of That's Awesome, if you book through her for your Disney vacation, you will pay no fee
for
her services, and you'll get extra Mickey Mouse ears and autograph books. That autograph book from my oldest Juno was filled. She had never had an autograph book before.
Oh, that's so cool.
It became her mission. She loved it.
It's amazing. Yeah, Brooklyn's birthday is coming up, dude. I gotta call Tracy. So
absolutely.
Middle of the Magic Travel for your Disneyland extravaganzas.
Not just Disneyland, Disney World, Aulani, Disney Cruise Lines, anything Disney.
Oh, good.
Book your Disney vacation through Middle of the Magic Travel. Tell them we sent you, and you'll get ears and autograph books and pay no fee for their amazing service. Middleofthemagictravel.com.
Hey, everybody. You got to check out this amazing new true crime podcast. It's called 22 Hours, An American Nightmare. It's about a murder that took place in Washington, D.C.
That's right. A family and their housekeeper were held hostage for 19 hours before being killed when the murderer set their mansion on fire. You'll be shocked by what they went through during those 19 hours, and you won't believe how they found the guy. I won't ruin the ending, but all I'll say is pizza crust. I'm telling you, it is awesome. So keep an eye out for a special sneak peek extra episode this week here on That's Awesome.
And if you can't wait, download 22 Hours, An American Nightmare now on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One. New episodes every Monday.
Did you test with Tristan?
I tested with Tristan and Finola.
And Finola, great.
Yes.
Wow.
That's awesome. Wow.
It's pretty awesome. Here we are.
Two polar opposites.
were you intimidated by their accents?
No, not really. I actually was very comfortable, I remember. Finola, Tristan was very matter-of-fact.
Sure.
You know, he was a very matter-of-fact kind of guy.
Still
okay,
is.
Let's do this, exactly.
Yeah.
And Finola was very accessible.
Yeah,
you know, she just couldn't wait to act and, you know, let's rehearse
amazing.
This and let's run this and let's do all
this.
She's kind
the same. It's amazing how they're the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now,
because
she's always like, let's run this, and we'll run it 20 times. I'm like,
right.
Are we good?
Yep.
She's like, one more time. Let's do it. I'm like, all right, cool.
And Tristan will run things if there's a lot of dialogue, but if it's, you know, if it is what it is, we'll just see him up on stage, and he's ready to go.
Yeah, he's so funny.
And always full of surprises.
Always. I don't get the chance to work with him a lot, but the other, when we got to look for Anna for – on the show, he came up to me and goes, my character would never say this to you. I said, oh, okay. Yeah. And that was it. And right. I'm like, all right, let's do the scene. So we figured it
that
out.
That happens
but
a lot.
I know, but it was fun. He's so funny, though. Yeah. I love working with him. But
And when you started, was it?
So it you started when?
It was madness. So 80, Gloria Monty.
89, 90.
91.
Oh, you started. Dude, I came right after you.
Yeah, 91.
Then like literally.
January of 91.
Oh, I was right at the end of. Yes, yeah, right after that.
And Gloria Monty brought me on. Did she bring you on?
Gloria
did.
She
must have, yeah.
Yeah, she did.
So Gloria was there for 1 year.
Yep,
and
exactly.
They really hit. Now, you know, this was the time when Tony Geary came back to the show. Gloria got him to come back, but he played a different character. Bill Eckert.
Yep.
And they brought 9 people on for the Eckert family, and which meant they kind of had to let go of a lot of people on the show because they just couldn't carry, you know, 500 contract players on General Hospital,
sure.
Which I think at the time kind of didn't make the audience too happy that the Eckerts replaced people that we've been watching for 3 to 5 to 8 years.
Yeah.
So that family kind of got hit hard by the audience response. And fortunately for me, I didn't take anything away from Robert and Anna. I was kind of added, you know, like a little salt or pepper or mayonnaise or something to their storyline, which helped me, I think.
Right.
And then slowly the Eckerts seemed to kind of vanish. And actually one of the Eckerts, Cheryl Richardson,
yes.
Who played Jenny Eckert.
Cheryl Richardson,
she's still
right.
One of our, you know, one of my dearest friends.
That's awesome.
And she's actually works for Merrill Lynch, and she handles all my money that I really don't have.
So she ended up with a real job.
She's doing great. Doing great. But, you know, it's just incredible how life has unfolded and the people you meet and the friends you keep. And
I mean, so you were thrown into it because when I got here, you were the man.
I was the man. I don't know if I was the man, but I had a lot of heat behind my character.
You had a lot of heat everywhere. I mean, in the magazines, the talk about it. You were kind of the new guy.
Well, if that's because I never saw it that way. I just felt like
that's
interesting. I just felt like I was feeling comfortable, even though we had a contract. I still was nervous about being fired after 13 weeks. You know,
sure. Right.
And I just wanted to come and do a good job.
That's
and
interesting.
As you remember, those days were. We were only doing 25 scenes a day, but we would block in the morning until lunch, and then we would tape the scenes, and we would go until 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. So you're coming in at 7 o'clock in the morning and work until 1 o'clock
in the
morning.
So the first half of the morning was just rehearsals?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Camera rehearsal. And they would take notes.
Notes, yeah.
And then what happened was when we're blocking and when we're taping the scenes in the afternoon, they would come out and tweak the scene.
Sure.
Francesca.
Yes, exactly.
Would come out and say, hey, dude, try it this way. Go back in, tape it. Come back out. Run back out. Can you just try it one more time like this? I mean, literally like 2 to 5 times we'd get a chance to do a scene, which was incredible.
And I think someone had the great idea to say, why don't we just block? If we're going to tweak scenes, if we're going to block in the morning and take and even block differently in the afternoon, why don't we start everybody in hair and makeup, you know, and block and tape?
Yeah.
So the actors come in for the set, whoever's working in this set, they come up for scene one, come on up, they block in it. And then they tape it.
Yeah.
Right. They block it, and then they tape it.
Yeah.
And they block it. So they can tweak it along the way.
And it was fresh.
Yeah, exactly.
It was fresh. And the blocking was fresh. Now we get our blocking hours before, and, you know, you should write it down, but half the time I'm like, hey, Bill, where do you want me to go on this one?
Exactly.
Right? So
exactly.
It's, you're not getting a
full.
Well,
that's because you're Steve Burton. John York, I have a stenographer write my blocking down, so I make sure I get every letter correct.
I usually remember my blocking, but
exactly.
But it's interesting because perspective-wise, you were the guy. You were the guy.
I was hot with my mullet. Remember my
dude,
mullet?
You had a sweet ass mullet, and you were freaking ripped. You had 29 abs. You had abs on your shoulders and your arms and on your butt.
I'm going to bring that mullet back out in a picture.
You
should. When I go back to Tristan and I are going back to New Jersey.
Yeah, you're doing an event there, right?
In November.
Yeah,
that's fun, man.
I got my first Max Scorpio picture.
Oh, I love it. But yeah, I remember that I came on and you were the guy. You know, you were the guy.
Well, I was having fun. It was a lot of fun and just feeling my way through. Well, and every day was new. Every day was exciting.
Were you a WSP working with
Tony?
Agent
Tony Geary was. I was not. Well, not until later.
Did I get the acronym right?
Yes, WSB, World Security Bureau.
Well, because that's what Tristan was. That his character was Robert was an agent. Right?
He was an agent. Yes.
So what was your Mac's first job when he came on? What was?
Well, Mac was a he just like a pirate. He was a mercenary for hire. I came in on the ELQ Tracy, the Edward and Lila Quartermain.
Right.
Tracy. Cargo ship, and my job was to sink the ship, and we sank the ship in the harbor, and that's when all chaos broke loose, and that's when I swam out and came up out of the harbor, and Robert lifted me up and then threw he recognized
did you
me
have a were you
and
shirtless?
Threw me back in. No, I had a heavy coat on, heavy and jeans and pants and boots, and I mean I was sinking. There's a scene I actually
and you were
I YouTube
and you
this.
Were waiting for Tristan to save you.
I'm just trying to swim, just. Literally, John York is trying to swim to shore just to get, because I'm drowning, you know. It's not like I had any floaties on underneath this jacket.
No.
And it was weighing me down, but I made it back to shore.
Well, there was some truth in your fight there.
And then my very first scene, one of my first scenes on stage was at Kelly's, which was my audition scene.
Okay.
And I was on the phone over there in the corner, the payphone, which is not there anymore because everybody has a cell phone.
Right. But
I was on the payphone going, "Your ship's come in, sir. Limping badly, I'm afraid." And I think my accent was a little better than that, so it was very subtle.
Yeah.
Do you still have one now on the show?
Oh, no, I lost it. When Wendy was producer, I think it was like year 4 or 5, she's just, you know what, just forget the accent. Because I'm sure I was kind of going in and out of it, and some people were like, does Mac have an accent? Other people, and I meet people that are like, you're not Australian? So it was confusing everybody. And
it was
just,
like Kevin Costner and Robin Hood.
Exactly. So now I just tell people I'm a Chicago Polak playing an Australian living in upstate New York.
Perfect.
That's my character.
And now you don't have to do it anymore.
I don't have to do it anymore.
God bless you, because that was not my strong suit.
Right.
Thanks for trying.
Was not?
Good effort.
Good effort.
Good effort
with the accent.
And I would have not gotten a good effort.
Not only accent, but how about a ventriloquist? Who comes up with Mr. Marbles?
What writer
comes up and says, hey, you know what? I bet John York could be a ventriloquist for the nurse's ball.
Is that what you did?
Oh, that's right. You were somewhere else. You were in some other
small town
in America.
Is this recently?
This was the last couple of years.
So you did.
It's gone. It's
I thought
not
that was
anymore.
A callback from years ago.
Are you a ventriloquist?
No, Mr. Marbles came on.
Did you do his?
You guys weren't here for the.
But did you do it?
Ball. Yeah. I did
it
like this. I just sit like this. You know, and I'd say, hey, what's going on? Hey, everybody, what's going on?
That's what we do on the road. He sits on my lap. I go, hey, everybody.
Pretty much.
But it was
funny. Amazing.
I did it 1 year, and then the following year, we got rid of him. He was destroyed.
Why?
Epiphany,
what happened?
Epiphany just threw him on the ground and smashed him.
Epiphany.
I know.
That's messed up, dude.
I don't know why it happened, but it happened.
So you came on 91. And you had a daughter right away, so you came into responsibility right away. So that must have been an interesting, because you were at the height of playing like this hot guy in a soap, and you're
making money, having
making
a
money,
kid,
and
getting married.
Yeah,
yep.
I mean everything.
It was fun. It was fun. So life was comfortable and life was good, and we were able to. It was nice to be able to supply Skylar with, you know. What another thing about that is the job I had, even though a lot of times we worked long hours, most of the time I was there in the morning to make Skylar breakfast when she would get up,
yeah.
And I would be home in time for dinner.
Sure.
You know,
that's what makes this job great, right?
When she started school, by that time I wasn't working 5 days a week. You know, you're working 1 or 2 days a week, and then you might have a week off and then another 3 days, 1 week. So I'm there all the time, and I'm taking her to school and walking her to school and spending daddy-daughter time, picking her up from school.
Amazing.
The joke was, when I would pick Skylar up from school, the car line, I was usually number 1, 2, or 3 in the car line. That's how early I would get there. When my wife would pick Skylar up, Skylar's like waiting there for an hour and a half.
That's what happens now with my son. All the time. He's like, Dad, can you take me to school? Mom's always running late. And I'm like, well, she's got to do more than I do. So, and picking him up, I'm always there, like parked in the same spot. I'm like, just walk out, you know.
Yep.
And he's always so time conscious. It's just funny.
And it was, you know, it was a lot of attention, a lot of things going on. And Soap Opera Digest actually had, there was not only just the Daytime Emmys Award. Digest Awards. And I was nominated for my one and only daytime nomination was for Best Newcomer. And I got killed by some other newcomer.
Yeah.
I want to know who won that.
Somebody
else.
Too.
Somebody
else. Too.
We got to go.
Somebody else came newer?
Someone was newer. Yeah.
Yeah, I think because I got nominated for a few of those. And then I look back and I should have probably been a little more gracious or humble.
I'm sure you were fantastic.
But I won hottest yeah. male star.
And you still are.
And I'm like.
And best smelling.
And I go, oh, I guess I'll thank hair and wardrobe. I just didn't really take it seriously.
Sure.
But anyway.
Yeah.
Well, my only note to anyone who's ever in the position to do the awards, you know, to be out there and to announce an award.
Announce one.
Make sure, yeah. Because Christina and I were asked to announce, I think it was either supporting actress. I think it was supporting
Emmys?
Actress. Emmys. Daytime yeah, yeah, Emmys. Yeah, yeah, so this yeah. was a big deal for me. Now I'm really, my mouth
well, you
really
probably could
dry.
Have given me advice for this recent one that I just announced.
So, and I didn't read the names and I didn't know anything. So what do? You go out there, you open the card, you read the names, you know, Bill, Tom, Harry, and Steve, you know, yeah. But it was they're females. Okay, right. Mary, Sally.
Yeah.
And I opened the card, and they're so-and-so, and then I see these letters. And the letters were M-A-E-V-E, and it was like, Mav. You know, I didn't know what it was, so I said Maeve Kincaid. And it was Maeve Kincaid.
Right,
yeah.
But I didn't know her, you right. know, and I didn't know her character. I didn't know anything about it, and I didn't pre-read it.
Yeah.
And I got hit a little bit, you know, in
yeah.
Port John. You could at least say the name correctly.
Right.
Later
yeah.
on, but she won.
Yeah.
Well, I should have handed the card to Christina.
Well,
and the winner is Christina. You do the
yeah.
honors.
Well, so, do you remember Adele when John Travolta tried to say Idina Menzel and it was like Adele Nazim or something like yeah. that? Well, he was introducing her. Like he was yeah. introducing her to sing Let It Go
well,
or something.
That's different. You should at least know.
Adele Nazim. Yeah.
Because gosh. At least there was one out of five chance she was going to win.
I know.
Right? Right. So, of yeah. course, she wins. And the same thing happened with me and Ingo when we presented this past month. We presented, and I'm looking at the names, and Jacqueline Wood had her maiden name for her middle name, and I didn't know how to pronounce it. And he's like, you know how to pronounce it? I said, no. I go, do you? I said, you worked on Bold and Beautiful for a year. You should probably know how to pronounce it. He goes, no, I have no idea. I said, forget it. Who cares? So of course she wins, and I'm and he goes and the winner is and he gives I go, I'm like, you son of a bitch, and I go, Jacqueline Wood.
Yeah, perfect. That's exactly right.
So I just left out her middle name, and I'm like, oh man, I should have freaking, you know, been a better student of the names. But it was funny. So anyway,
it's the little things we don't think about in this business.
Yeah, right.
I know, right? You're like, I'll be fine up there.
Well, our job is so much about preparation, but it's always the one thing that you're like, oh, that'll never come up. It's you know, it's when you go to an audition and they're like, hey, there's here's three scenes, but they're only going to read one and two, and then you get in there and they're like, yeah. hey, we're reading three today.
Right.
What?
Yeah. Wait.
No. Or no. Yeah. It's always that always happens. But
well, you know, it's interesting because listening to that podcast, that one podcast that I listened to in the car
with the Uber driver,
Uber driver.
You can thank him.
I'm listening to this actor talking, and because every actor has a different process with this process of you know sure. what we do and how we do it, how we approach it. You know, you got to learn the lines first of all. And there's backstory, there's further story, there's what's going on, you know, the immediacy of what's going on. Where have you been? Where are you going? Where'd you come from? What's your relationship with this act, you know, what do you want from this person? All this different kind of stuff. And I'm listening to this act talking, I'm thinking, man, I got a headache. I'm just because he's talking about how much work he puts in. He just hours and weeks and months of work. I'm like, come on, you really don't do that. I know because I'm an actor. You know?
And John.
And I knew the driver was an actor. And it ultimately comes down to, well, what's interesting on daytime is you know a lot of the stories. You know
because you
characters.
Live it.
You're yeah. living it all yeah. the time.
Right.
And it comes down to the relationships. So sure. it's about being in the moment, listening,
yeah.
watching the other actor. There's yeah. one thing great about Tony. Yeah. I remember doing a scene when Lucky was in a hospital bed. And I brought him a little something, you know, as a little gift. And the look on Tony's, you know, we rehearsed it a couple times.
Yeah.
And the camera rehearsed it. And now we're taping it. And taping, he gave me something different. You know, he was different. And it was great. It was almost like he was pissed off that I was. It was totally different.
Yeah.
Right.
And thankfully, for my training, I was right there and watching him, you know, and it changed me and it changed everything. And it
right.
made it really fun and interesting for me. that moment, that experience in that 45 seconds or whatever it was.
That's what we live for.
Exactly.
That's kind of what we live for,
right? That's what we live for.
It's finding those. And we don't get them that often.
Right.
Right.
Because most of it's information.
Right. A lot of it is.
I'm a cop. Go to the, I'll meet you at the, you know, I'll meet you at the location.
Especially you being a cop.
Right.
And a lot of it was describing things or information or whatever it was. Right.
Wow. So those special scenes of Kimberly telling me she was HIV positive.
Oh,
that was my very first, quote unquote, I get goosebumps again.
Yeah, it's
acting,
an amazing
story. Acting moment on film
because,
or on, you know, videotape, whatever.
Yeah.
Because, and even though we rehearsed it many times, now, okay, we're going to be, now we're, you know, tape's rolling. And it's just like you take a small breath and look at, you know, and make eye contact. And now you're living. And now, now it's happening for real.
Yeah.
For right now.
Yeah.
And I get emotional because it was so wonderful, this sweet, beautiful little girl telling me that she was HIV
amazing.
Positive. It was just – and the tosses and turns. Oh, my God. I'm concerned, but I'm angry. And, you know, all these different things happening.
Yeah,
it was just such a great experience as an actor. It was like, wow, that's why I wanted to do this back when. I didn't know if I wanted to be a camera operator, a stunt guy. And this is why I'm doing this right now.
Yeah. There's nothing like that creative –
right
moment, you
right.
know, there's nothing like it, and you can never prepare for it.
Right,
right. So,
well, that's exactly right.
You know your stuff so well, great, and then you're living, and things happen. The hardest thing to explain to, I think, to people who watch the show is most of the stuff that happens in the scene isn't necessarily on the page.
Right,
and I don't mean that in a disrespectful way to the writers,
right?
Because you have to be on the page to do what we do. But the layers and the depth sometimes and the complexity of maybe a scene that was written very simply, that something comes out of it, like you have those moments with you and Kimberly, you're like, wow.
Yeah.
And that's when writers are like, yes!
Exactly.
You know?
And what he said about relationships is part of that, right?
100%.
And that's what's cool about, you know, the days that we spend here and, you know, and, you know, if you're a good actor, chances are you can have chemistry with just about anybody, right? Because if you're listening and reacting, it's going to look like chemistry. But when you work with someone for a bit and you start to care about them, especially when it's a kid, right?
Yeah.
Or, you know, like when you actually, you know, we talk sometimes about, like, you substitute. Like, oh, I need to feel this for this character, so I'm going to think about somebody else in my life that will have – that can get that from me. But – we know each other so well and we spend a lot of time here that you might not be in love with your scene partner, but you care about them enough that when you're saying things and when your character has to be in love with that person, you can still pull from how you feel about that
right.
actress and not be in love with them, but you can still feel, do you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And that's all based on relationships that we have in this building. And so therefore you don't have to spend days and weeks trying to figure out a way to have this experience.
Yeah, to have the layers.
Yeah.
Well, as you guys were talking, and Steve, as you were talking, I'm thinking it's the contradiction of prepare actors. You got to prepare. You got to prepare. You got to prepare, which means you're already, you know, there's something already in your brain. But you prepare, you prepare, you prepare. You prepare yourself to then
let
it go.
Yeah.
And
so
let it alone.
Present.
Isn't it weird?
It's it's a total contradiction.
It's weird, John, because it's the one thing you said, living through it is huge for us to not have to necessarily prepare emotionally, right? Like, you loved Kimberly. It's a kid. You've lived through the stuff with her. This is a big moment. And whatever you did to prepare was gone. And you didn't have to probably rely on that at all.
Right.
Right. There's scenes where you have to rely on your preparation emotionally because you can be in the scene and you're like, this isn't really going the way that maybe I thought it should or maybe it should be. And then you can kind of tap into your homework and maybe make it something you're like, okay, that was okay.
Right.
That was not bad. It wasn't the greatest, but my homework helped.
And as an actor, you take that time then in the scene. You know, you'll automatically, professionally, whatever the word is, stop yourself and pay more attention.
Yes.
And you're right there.
Yes.
And you might be with a day player who's coming in, who's scared to death, but yet there's still something going on.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when Georgie died, and this is, you know, another really moment that was so great for me, that living it, was when Georgie died and I went to the hospital in the hub, and Kimberly McCullough was coming off, Robin was coming off the elevator, and she just sees me. And I just remember pacing in the back and thinking, I got to cry.
That's what I was going to ask you.
Oh, my God, I got to cry. How am I going to cry? I'm sad and trying to tighten my butthole. You know, like, come here, squeeze those tears up, man. You know, come on, you got to cry. And I'm just thinking, okay, so Georgie's dead. You know, and I slowed myself down. Georgie's dead and pacing. And then you hear the stage manager, okay, tape is rolling. Okay, in 5, 4, and he counts it down. And they cue me in and around the hub, and all of a sudden the elevator doors open, and I look up and I see Kimberly's eyes.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
It's not hard to fall apart and just your water, you know. And it's because I love her as a person. She loves me. And Uncle Mac, what's wrong? It's just like she might as well be saying, John, John, what's wrong? Yeah. What's going on?
Right.
And it was just really special. And that's kind of how it happens.
So there's good things and bad things. The bad thing is the pressure that we put on ourselves.
Yeah.
Where you can actually get yourself so mentally into a block.
Right.
It's happened to me twice where just nothing, it wouldn't happen. Because I'd put so much pressure on myself that it had to happen, that you get performance anxiety and you can't do it, right?
I'm going to tell you, though, before you go to the other thing, is I'd rather see you do nothing than squeeze those tears out of the toothpaste, you know.
Sure.
I'd rather see nothing.
And that's the best
advice. As the audience.
That's the best advice Maurice ever gave me. Yep. He said, if it's not there, don't force it. You're fine.
Yep.
You're going to get another day to live.
Yep.
Okay,
absolutely.
Great. So then for me, I had to go back to sense memory stuff and tools that I used to get there. I had to go back and just refresh it, right, for me. So to get through that block. So that's the downfall. I don't know if other people go through that. I know you just said you did.
Right, yeah.
But I don't know if like Maura West does and Finola and all these ladies who are so emotionally available all the time. Guys aren't usually as emotionally available as women. But, you know, I don't know if everybody puts pressure on themselves. I'm sure they do. Or they're in a scene that like, this ain't going the way it should be going. And I'm not where I should be at this point. But, okay, there's the show and we'll do it tomorrow. You know, I don't know. It's just really interesting. And the flip side was, because I have like one or two good takes in me for me. Just the way we've been trained and programmed here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Going to do a film and you have 10 takes, I'd rather put a gun to my head.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Because like that moment, you're like, holy crap, how am I going to cry? What am I going to do? Okay, take a breath. I see Kimberly. It's freaking Waterworks. And then all of a sudden, cut. We got to do it again. Then I'm screwed.
Right.
Right. Thank God it was one take.
Right.
Dude, it just made me think of it. When I worked on Homeland a couple years ago, I don't know if you've ever watched that show, but Claire Danes, she plays this. Did you watch that show?
I did sometimes.
Yeah,
it's Claire Danes.
Yeah, Claire Danes plays this character that has mental illness, that is high stakes.
She's a hell of an actress
all the time.
Right.
Right.
That, yeah.
And the way that show works, the energy. I don't know how she was able to come up, come down, come up, come down, come up, come down. It must be exhausting, and like, and because I'm the same way as you. Once we're here, we know when we have to get up, and then we know how long we have to stay there.
Yeah,
and we know we're coming down. So like,
we're the only medium
that does. Yeah,
that you can go. Okay, my son died on the show. I have these 5 scenes today. That's going to shoot about 3 p.m. I'm going to start kind of getting ready. My routine, I'll be up, see the red light, you're going up the stairs, you're on stage, it's quiet, you know it's time, that you're going to have your time to do whatever you do in that couple hours.
Right.
Yeah. Right? You go to a film, and you're completely screwed.
And because, well, and also because we have 4 cameras.
Yeah.
You know, so they've got their close up and they've got their wide shot. So everything is kind of, they may even have 3 cameras on you. So when you're doing it and feeling it and experiencing it that one time, they've captured it.
Isn't it amazing?
Instead of, you know, they got two film cameras, and now we're going to go in for – we're going to get a wide shot, and we're going to get – and now – but they're only on you. And now guess what? Now they're going to turn the cameras around, and you got to do the whole thing another two, three, or four times for the other actor.
Yeah.
And you want to be present and give them the same emotion
that
you're trying to put on film
never
when
happens.
You're on camera.
Right. But that never happens, by the way. Yeah. That's why I have such huge respect for film actors in the sense that they're basically acting with nothing a lot of the times.
Right.
And we're not.
Right.
Right? It's those days where you're not feeling something. All of a sudden, something happens in Bradford's eyes, and I'm there now. Now you're filming a performance for me because of Bradford, right? Not because of a piece of tape on the lens.
And that's happened. How many times are you acting to a piece of tape?
Oh, it was,
and the audience doesn't, you know, they just don't know it. They don't see it. And hopefully that's where we're trying to do the best we can do to make you believe what we're saying.
Maura West this year when Kiki got killed, and she's...
Kiki, do you
love me? Because it is hard to act... So... I remember when I was the one that found Georgie, right? Spinelli found Georgie. And it's when your scene partner's dead, they're not giving you anything. So you have to create the whole thing. And that's when you put a lot of pressure on yourself, especially because you're like, oh my God, she's dead. I have to have this huge reaction because that seems like what would be normal, not just because I want to like show my waterworks for my ego. No, it's like that seems like that would be warranted. That's the but when you don't have any help, when like
you're alone on the island
buddy. If the person's dying they're with you and they're like and then they die like or whatever but if you're just coming up on a cold body but more
that's the range of true emotions. You don't know how you're going to react when you get information like that or see something like that.
And that's I remember seeing Maura do that with Kiki, and her first reaction was like, no, wake up, right. Like, and that's tough to play too because of that's sometimes a little melodramatic, but maybe it's not. Who knows? But it's hard to act with a dead body, even though it's so because you're right. When the scene partner is giving you something else, because we know them, because we love them, because we respect them, because of whatever, you have a natural reaction, which can then be part of your character's reaction, and that is helpful.
It's hard to act with a dead body. There's a joke in there somewhere. There's an actor's name in there somewhere.
Well, I act with Bradford every day. You seen Weekend at Bernie's?
Exactly.
He's Bernie.
Oh, my God.
That's amazing.
You guys are awesome. You guys are awesome.
That's so funny, though. But it just makes it so fun, though, when those moments happen, you know?
Yeah.
Was an actor that came on, just a day player, and he was having such a hard line. I could see how nervous he was, poor guy. And, you know, he just had a couple of lines. And it was kind of a wordy... you should know the answer to this. I was thinking about and a leather. What's it called when the word has like a rhythm to it or
alliteration?
Alliteration. Thank you. I was looking for that word yesterday, and I couldn't
think of it. A lot
of
words that start with the same sound.
Yes. Yeah. So he had this speech that there was that going on, and it was just really kind of difficult. Plus, he was feeling the pressure of his one line.
Sure, of course.
And my goal was just to get this guy focused in my eyes and relaxed and, you know, you got it. You know this. You've been practicing this all night.
Take a breath.
Since you auditioned for this, you know this line. Just relax. No big deal. And, we did it and it was great. But,
you know, that makes a huge difference because we get a lot of these guys who are a day player or three or four shows or whatever. And a lot of them obviously are nervous, but they know their stuff because, look, when we had an opportunity, we knew our stuff backward and forward. If you're going to a job and then you get there, you're still nervous and all the stuff. But it's great because we've been here so long and we've seen so many people come in. It's easy to go, okay, dude, you know your stuff. Let's just take a breath now. Let's have a little fun.
Let me ask you guys how...
We ask the questions.
No, I'm asking the question. How do you guys learn your lines? Because I don't know if you've ever talked about that with other actors. I learned and this happened only when I got General Hospital and I knew how much work there was.
Yeah, interesting.
I went and got a little mini tape recorder.
I've done that.
I would count down. I'd get my scene and I'd count it down like the stage manager. Okay, in 5, 4, 3, 2, and I would read his lines, your lines into the recorder, and then I would say my lines slowly to myself. And just do that for the whole scene. And then when I would play it back, I would get my cues and I would learn my lines.
You would learn it that way, huh?
However many times it took. And now I know my lines, which for me made it easier to forget my lines, to not even think about the words,
and
pay attention to the other actor,
and
also take adjustments. Because all the time you're getting, you know, okay, we're going to, these lines are out, these lines are in, we're going to add this line. It makes it so much easier to take then, those adjustments, you know, when they throw something new at
then
you.
Then fumbling through and you can't make an adjustment.
Right.
Yeah. Interesting. How do you learn, how do you learn yours, Brad? Well, you have a...
Early on,
a difficult task because he talks that freaking
exactly,
mumbo jumbo.
Yes.
So early on here, I would see I still see that sometimes I can see the pages in my head very easily. I don't want to call it semi photographic.
It is kind of because I can do the same.
But so I would learn my lines. I would learn all my lines, and sometimes I had like monologues of, you know, like metaphor and
I know
and
I was there
stories. Yeah, you were there for a lot of this, right? But I always knew the space where other people were talking, and I knew what they were going to say. But I always liked not knowing the other person's lines so well because it made me listen more. If I knew their lines so well, then I just love not knowing their line. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
So and so. And it really served me because it made me allow – as long as I knew what they were supposed to say and what I had to say, I could always steer them out of a problem if they went up.
Right.
And, so I never – I use that tactic for auditions now. I have an app on my phone that records
the – Of course you do.
Well,
is it next to your podcast app?
Yeah, right?
Yes.
But when I'm driving down from Sacramento – I have this app on my phone, and you know I record the other lines on the app, and then it just replays and replays and replays.
That's great.
Which is awesome because I can just drill as I'm driving down.
Yeah.
But for Spinelli, I never did that because I don't want to say I learned his lines as a monologue because that means that I didn't pay attention to the other people's lines. But and then once it became part of in me a little bit, I didn't have to spend that much time.
I just have to kiss your butt a little bit because you're so good at and taking the beats within all that mumbo jumbo of what you have to say. And
the only way
to make it so clear, though,
to
us that are listening, the characters, it's just like, wow. Because like, how do you do that?
the only way to memorize it was to truly understand what he was trying to say. You know, I could never. It would have been easy just to be like, oh, I don't understand what he's saying. Well, I'll just buzz through it because no one else is going to know either. But, like, I had to be so specific about what he was saying and make sure I understood everything because that was the only way I could remember it. Because otherwise, I mean, we've all worked with people here that you know they're just memorizing words.
Right.
Not making sense of what they're saying. They're just memorizing words. And the problem with that is you can memorize words. That's all fine. It's not a good performance. But if you forget the words – and you don't know what you're actually saying, there's nowhere to go from there.
Yeah, you can't save you
can't figure out something else that'll fit instead because you didn't know what you were supposed to say in the first place. How did you do it?
I just start reading. I did what John did during one story when Monica had breast cancer.
Okay.
And it was some really big scenes that I had with Leslie.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to – I felt like this was the first time that I had a chance to show something. And I did exactly – I remember I had the boombox in my studio apartment, and I recorded her lines, and I would just go over it and over it and over it and over it. And it ended up being great. For me, it worked, and it was awesome. But ever since – I mean, I do have somewhat of a semi-photographic memory. When I did Romeo and Juliet, I was able to memorize that really quick.
Wow.
But I didn't have Bradford's experience of, what are you saying? I don't freaking know. I'm just saying these freaking words, right? So – and that would have helped me tremendously understand Shakespeare.
Well, yeah, because that's the thing with Shakespeare – bad Shakespeare is people just saying the words.
Yeah, it was just not great.
Yeah.
And
not to say that you were bad.
I was bad. I learned the biggest cheat move ever that – from a guy, an actor, Jameson Newlander, who was in Lost Boys.
Okay.
He was in – this is going off the subject for 1 second, but it's worth saying. He was in – he was really good actor, really good actor. He was in Romeo and Juliet. And I think the thing with doing a play so much is when you're supposed to be emotional, can you be emotional every night in the same place?
Right.
Right?
Right.
That's the difficulty for people, for actors. So there was times where he couldn't be emotional because we did the play so much that he would hide Vicks Vapor Rub in his belt area and would just swipe his finger and go like that on his tear ducts, and then it would come. It was the biggest cheat move ever, but it ended up working because emotionally he was there. He just wasn't crying, but then he ended up crying because his freaking eyes were burning out of his skull. Wow. It was amazing because, you know, with some people, they blow that vapor rub on their eyes
right.
in the film. You know that, right?
I
you didn't know that?
No, I like.
Well, actual... because if you're in film and you have to sustain that crying, it's like a straw with vapor rub,
right.
And they blow
menthol,
it on your eyes,
just to irritate your eyes,
and you start crying right away.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then you can kind of get ramped into it. But anyway, so but semi-photographic memory. So now I just read over and over and over again.
Yeah.
So I end up knowing my lines and everybody else's, which
sounds
is
like Michael Caine, because I heard years and years ago someone asked Michael Caine, how do you memorize all those lines? He says, I read it until I know it.
That's pretty much it, dude. If I read it out loud a couple times through, then it just is in me.
Yeah.
I mean, it takes me a while. I never have it. I don't even say I never have it fully memorized, because I will. But as you know, you're always kind of reading over it, and you're reading it maybe with your scene partner here or not before. You're blocking it, you're rehearsing it, and you're never fully done with it until you're done.
And interestingly enough, when you're done, it's like it just vanishes from my head.
When they
say cut and we're moving on,
it's gone.
It just automatically disappears. And if they say after you film the, you know, two or three more scenes, we got
to
go back. Uh-oh. Well, now, wait a minute. I need to run this a couple times because I don't even remember what I said.
Yeah. Isn't it weird? Because I was listening to a Joe Rogan podcast, and I was thinking, because he had some guy for traumatic brain injury and Alzheimer's and just memory. I go, it would be an interesting study to take a soap actor who's done it for 20 years, who's had to memorize 20, 30 pages, 3 or 4 days a week. Where does it go?
Right.
Right. Where does it actually go, and how does it affect your other part of memory, or does it? You know what I mean?
Oh, into your head. Yeah.
Yeah. It's supposed to keep you sharper. They say read, do stuff as you get older.
I have a really big empty space in my brain.
Your head
that
is
all this
is
stuff
very,
goes to.
Very,
it just kind of floats in my head.
Is that
where
the
it's just,
little trash can?
Yeah,
back
it's just
there,
floating, and then it somehow like vapor. It leaves my ear.
I wish it was that easy.
A slow escape.
I wish it was that easy, John.
Right.
But I'm seriously, I mean, where does it all go?
Yeah.
But you're right, because if I'm done. Like if they go, oh, we have to go back, because, you know, in the older days, they would say, oh, we got to go redo a scene that we shot 2 weeks ago.
Because,
added pinks, or they were short or something.
I know there's got to be an answer for this. There has to be an answer for this, because it's part of the brain studies and the brain. You know, there are people who know all this information who can probably tap into what you're asking, only because my mother-in-law, who is the onset of dementia, you know, and losing her memory, she doesn't, a lot of times doesn't remember my name, you know, and I'm with her every single day. Losing her that memory, that short-term type memory.
Yeah.
I'd say 6 months, 8 months, a year, however long ago. I remember I was trying to fix up our house security system, and I'm on the phone, and the lady asked me, what's your code? It wasn't on for a while.
Yeah.
What's your password?
You know?
And I totally forgot. I'm like, oh, my gosh, what's my password? And I'm thinking, I don't know. My password. And I was saying that out loud, and Nana came from around the corner, and she said the password. And I was like, oh, that's right. And I told her, and I couldn't believe it. And she hadn't heard that in 20 years.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah.
So where does it go?
I don't know. It's interesting because, like, school study, you don't remember anything from school.
Right.
Right? It's like even I have to read stuff over and over. Like, even with the nutrition business, I'm, like, listening to podcasts and stuff all the time where it's beaten into my head, and then I remember, right? But it's like with short term, I can remember 50 pages in a night and do it the next day, and it's gone. It's just such a strange thing. But anyway, so John, I know you kind of touched on it already, but being here for decades now,
wow.
I mean, really, right?
It's true.
90s, 2000.
Wow. Well, so 28 years.
So
91.
So I know you've done a ton of stuff on the show, but what were kind of the stories that, you know, for me and Brad, it's always the emotional kind of stuff that stands out to me that I mm-hmm. remember because that's the most almost traumatizing
right.
as an actor and fulfilling sometimes. So what are the stories besides
is those there,
beside like no besides the HIV story
right
you know
some of the fun ones some
yeah
of the
more, yeah I mean what do you look back on and go man I've had a freaking awesome 28 years and these are my highlights if I was to do a highlight reel of John York.
I got to work with Artie Johnson who was in Laugh-In and,
yeah
you know I mean he played Finian O'Toole and we were down in the catacombs and Port Charles I don't even remember what the story was but just the fact that I'm working with Artie Johnson was
right.
crazy for me and he's the nicest guy working with Ricky Martin you know
yeah.
in the
oh,
Outback
yeah
and because of Ricky and his talent and singing on the show that brought Melissa Manchester on the show and I got this
yeah.
really cool picture
oh,
someone
yeah.
took of me and Melissa Manchester
yes.
just candid in between scenes
I forgot the whole Ricky Martin
BB King was on
yeah.
the show so many different things just what was fun for me is getting a script and all of a sudden I'm flying a helicopter.
Yeah.
You know, it's like being a ventriloquist. When did Mac learn how to fly a helicopter?
Right,
when am
sure.
I, you know, an explosives expert? You know, yeah. it's just like all of a sudden Mac knows all these different things. And that was kind of fun for me, the
Absolutely.
Fact that they thought I could do all this stuff.
That's amazing.
A lot of the fun that we have during the take, you know,
yeah.
or in the rehearsal.
Yeah.
I remember someone was being... Not Garcia. I forget the guy's name.
Password.
You know. But anyway, he's holding someone hostage, you know, and the cops have the building surrounded. And I had the blowhorn. Oh, my God. Don't give me the blowhorn.
Don't give John York a freaking blowhorn.
So it was the rehearsal, and it was my turn to talk. And I said, come out with your hands up. You know, and of course, that makes the crew laugh. And it's
yeah.
always fun to make the crew laugh because our
yeah.
crew, I'm sure you guys have spoken before very
sure.
highly about
yeah.
the people that work behind this behind
yes,
the cameras.
Of course.
They're so respectful. So present, so fun, so funny, so nice and kind. So it's nice to, you know, interact and be there for them and to give them a break every now and then. But those kind of things. You know, every
yeah.
actor has a different personality.
Yeah.
People often ask who's the jokester and prankster. You know, I kind of go right to Ken Schreiner, who's always making me laugh and saying funny things. And obviously, Bradford, you've got some funny things going on all the time.
No, well, not when I'm around you guys.
Well, it's in the rehearsals. Sometimes
yeah.
I wish the
yeah.
audience could see our rehearsals.
Oh,
you
dude.
Know, and some of the
because
things
honestly,
in between the takes.
If we could play scenes sometimes how we rehearse them.
It would be great.
It would be amazing.
Amazing.
And people would die laughing.
Yes.
Because it's funny.
There should almost be, wouldn't it be awesome if they could take, although we're down to what? Because we're, yeah. you know, there's so much commercial time that we're only down to, you know,
10 minutes
of show. But to take the last 6 or 8, you know, 6 minutes, 3, 4 minutes, and do some of that, the outtakes, you know,
oh,
or,
yeah.
or the fun things.
Yeah.
yeah
our Christmas reel.
Over,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
We don't really do end credits anymore, but because, they do next on General Hospital sometimes during the credits.
Yeah, it'd
right?
be cool
it'd
to
be
have
cool
an outtake
have
or two at the end of every episode, right?
Awesome.
Right.
That'd be cool. That's good content.
I remember one of my favorite eras is when I was Spinelli was starting to date Maxie and you were so against it and I remember some of the most fun comedic stuff that I got to do was I remember a scene where she and I were in her bedroom and she's trying to and you're kicking me out and I get wrapped up all in the sheets and
yep.
I start falling
I
everywhere
that.
And tripping over the ottoman and just we get to do a lot of fun stuff
yep.
back then. I mean I had a lot of fun and you had such a great, strong point of view about disliking me. That was a good time, too.
Right.
That's not hard to do. That's what made our relationship.
That's true. I think that is the basis of all my relationships on the show, people having little or no patience for me.
Yeah.
But for me, you know, I've been able to play comedy, drama,
yeah.
you know, and everything in between. So
it's been amazing.
It's been a lot of fun
yeah,
as an
man.
Actor. I'm, you know, so fortunate to be able to do that and still do it.
Yeah.
So
it's great, man.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Well,
are we done? Is this podcast over?
Yeah, that was a nice way to
Yeah, it was a great
it off,
that
man.
Was a great
a nice
Well, thank you for having me on your show.
A
is
nice
this
John,
a show?
Sweet
is this a show?
No,
yeah.
John's like
is there like music is there
John,
like
I text John and he goes, "You must be out of guests." I go, "No, John,
no,
we're actually not."
We're
you
not.
Do them alphabetically.
We're about
we're in
two
the Y's.
We're not even in the Y's cuz someone texted me last night and was like, "What are you guys running out of guests?" I go, "No, we still have another couple years." before we're in trouble.
That's right. True.
So, yeah. Because it's always great because we can never get enough in an hour. Usually we try
to do
an
hour.
Talk,
do you guys go in other areas other than acting, or is it always actors?
Well,
do you ever do athletes or?
Not yet, because we have such a deep pool for daytime. So once, you know, we're trying to get out of there a little bit, but there's no rush for us to do that.
And
if it falls into our lap,
you got to get a cameraman or a sound guy.
Yeah, I mean, I think eventually we would do that. We had Mark.
We'd run out of people.
Yeah.
No offense, you guys.
Yeah, we had Mark Teschner on,
okay,
which is amazing, and his insight was incredible.
Man. Yeah, that's a two-hour show.
I mean, it could have been. Yeah. You know, a lot of these can be 2 hours, but we'd rather do an hour and then have you back.
Once we get through, we'll go back through again.
No, I got to work another 20 years before you have me back.
No. You got plenty of stories.
That'll be 80.
We have plenty of stories on the road that we did not bring up that we won't talk about. And we had some fun, though.
The Steve and John Mall tours?
Yeah, we had some Sears tours, that's for sure. Tours. And
that was my first job. I was a mannequin model at a sports show. I worked for Adidas, and they hired me, and I was wearing their Adidas clothes, and I was just standing there.
In an active pose?
See, I knew the ventriloquism would come back.
That was my very first job as a mannequin model.
You were the dummy.
And exactly. Scaring little kids. They're looking at me.
Like, is that guy real? That's amazing. And now he's on Hollywood Boulevard, the wax museum.
Exactly.
Playing Max Scorpio as a wax dummy scaring kids. That's awesome. John, thank you,
thank
man.
You so much.
Thank you for having me.
You're always a pleasure. You're a great guy. We appreciate you, and we just
thanks for having me. This has been fun.
Love your work, man. Right. Appreciate it.
All right, brothers.
All right, Johnny Mac. Pluto TV is the leading free streaming television service. It's easy, completely legal, and yes, you can watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies for free.
Watch over 100 TV channels and thousands of movies on demand, all completely free. Pluto TV never asks for a credit card. You don't even need to sign up.
Yeah, and you can download Pluto TV on all your favorite devices, including your phone, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, smart TVs, PlayStation, and anywhere else you stream.
So what are you waiting for? Never pay for TV again by downloading Pluto TV.
Every car comes with its share of stories. That ding in your bumper when you nervously picked up a first date, the luxury package you got after a big promotion, or just the mileage you saved by riding your bike all summer. While you can't put a price tag on your stories, now with TrueCar, you can at least find out what your car's worth when it's time to sell it or trade it in.
Just go to TrueCar, simply enter your license plate number, and watch how your car's details pop up. Then answer a few questions. Navigation and moonroof? Watch as they bump up your value. High mileage? You already knew it was going to cost you, but now you know how much it dings your wallet so you can plan ahead. And once you're finished, you'll get a true cash offer sent in minutes, which you can take to a local certified dealer to cash out or trade in. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today. True cash offer not available in all areas.